We began our study of Ecclesiastes last week looking at some of the key terms and phrases like under the sun that's used repeatedly throughout the book. A word like vanity, we'll talk about that one too. Those were two of the most often used words and terms in the book. Under the sun, as we mentioned last week, typically denoted an earthly life that's apart from God. In other words, just living for the here and now. So, an earthly life that is apart from God. Obviously, a life that a large number of people, especially in our country, live. I mean, most of the people probably in our country live life under the sun. They're just concerned about the here and now. They're just concerned about this physical existence. Many of them don't even believe in an afterlife. And if they do, they think that everybody's pretty well going to be saved anyway, so why worry? So most people are living this life under the sun. They're just living in this world. So whatever they can get in this world and the easiest way to get it and all of that, without thinking about God and the fact that there is a judgment and that there's an accounting and they're going to have to tell God about their lives, essentially. So this is Solomon talks a lot in this book about a life under the sun and what it brings. And as we'll see here in chapter 1, he talks about some of the things it brought to him. Because sometimes he did things apart from God. You know, made decisions without thinking about the effects and did things without thinking about God. And those things all led to vanity. And we talked about the number of different ways that the word vanity was used in the book. Of course, it was used negatively, but there was one of the ideas was useless. A life apart from God is a useless life. Empty. Without purpose. Profitless. Those are just some of the words. It is used slightly different in different contexts depending on, you know, what he's talking about. But a life under the sun, without God, strictly about this world, is one that's useless. You know, if that's the only thing you're living for, then you're living an empty life. There's no purpose to your life. And we certainly see that in our society. People who live a life under the sun, we see how empty their lives really are. A lot of them don't see that their life is empty, but it's really quite empty. And Solomon begins to talk about that in the very beginning. Well, let's go to chapter 1 and read just a little bit. I want to go back and begin with verse 3. And kind of review a little bit from last week. He says, "What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever." Now, when you think about this, you know, he talks about toiling under the sun. Working, laboring under the sun. Where you're only working and laboring for this earthly life. And you don't have God in the picture at all. He says, one generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. What do you think he's trying to tell people? Because he's lived quite a life at this point. Okay, this was probably written toward the end of Solomon's life after he had experienced all kinds of situations. What's he wanting future generations to know? What kind of point do you think he's trying to make? I guess is what I'm saying. All right. Won't be easy. What is the point about what profit has a man from all of his labor? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
He's skipping something in his life that's more important than what he's doing in his life.
Okay. All right. There's something else there that needs to be there. All right. What is he trying to get across with the one generation passes, another generation comes? The earth, though, still remains. What does that have to do with working or profiting, laboring under the sun? What's he trying to get us to understand?
I think in the New King James Version, it says our generation. I think he's talking about our generation comes and goes. Like, I'm going to be here for a while. I'm going to die. The earth's going to be here. My offspring will be on the same earth that I'm on. But then I get tangled up in this phrase, but the earth remains forever. And I don't understand exactly what he means by that, because that's in direct contrast with what Matthew says.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So explain that.
Yeah. That's a good point. I was thinking about that this week when I was studying this. There are a number of places, especially in the Old Testament, where the term that's translated forever from the Hebrew has the idea of lasting until the time is up for whatever the purpose was. Not necessarily chronological time until, you know, it goes on and on and on. No, it's just time until that is up, whatever that time period is. The fullness of the time required. That's what one dictionary had for that word that's translated forever. You know, some places said the old law, the law of Moses, was forever. Well, it wasn't, but it lasted until the appointed time, until its time was up. You know, God had a certain amount of time, what, 1,600 years or something like that, that it was appointed. And that was forever. 1,600 years was forever in that instance. So sometimes forever doesn't mean eternal. So sometimes forever and eternal aren't always the same word, at least in the Old Testament in particular. And in these poetic books like Psalms and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, they use words like that sometimes. Where it's not like a history, it's not like narrative, just like people today when they write songs or write poetry or whatever, they will choose the word that kind of fits the idea they want to get across, but it's not necessarily how the word is used always. So I think this until the fullness of the time required is the best way of looking at the word forever. And when you talked about the generation, I think that's what he's really trying to get across. Because I'm going to labor so many years, and then that's it for me. Okay? And then my labor, for the most part, is going to be forgotten. And just think about how little we actually know about former generations, even with all of our technology and everything. How little we really know. And it's going to keep on doing that. Yes, Misty.
Well, if you add the few verses after that.
Right.
It's just that the cycle is in place.
Yeah.
It's going on and on and on. And the people are going to be born.
They're going to live. They're going to die. Yeah.
And the rivers are going to keep flowing. Yeah. And the wind's going to keep going around.
It's just,
so like you said, the appointed time has come for this
book. Yeah. And it's that cycle just continues. You know, it just keeps going on. One generation rises up. That generation works X number of years. That generation dies. That's just the cycle of life. That's just what happens. Some people, though, put their whole existence into that period, and that's it. That's all they have. I mean, when they're dead, they're dead. They've not prepared for anything past that, which is what he warns about. He says so many people think that, you know, everything is about about this life. And Solomon, in practically every chapter, and sometimes several times in the chapter, says, this life is not all there is. There's much, much more after that. He says, that's what you have to get ready for. Think about how depressing and discouraging it would be if what people thought was true. In other words, that this life was all there was to it. Think about how discouraging that is. I mean, that would just be so depressing to think that this life is it, and it's done. Yes, Miss.
That's probably one of the reasons why they're so desperate to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why a lot of people dedicate their lives to getting more, you know. Because if they don't think there's anything after this life, then they'd better get all the enjoyment they can now, because that's it. And Solomon warns, he says, you're not going to find any happiness or joy in accumulating stuff. Because life under the sun it's empty. It's an empty life. Regardless of how much stuff you have, your life's still empty. Because stuff, Solomon says, doesn't fill up your life. That's not what life's about. And he so drives that point home that, you know, the earth's been around a long time. One generation, another generation just keeps on going. And don't think that your generation is the most special. You know, every generation tends to think they're the smartest and they're not going to make the mistakes of former generations. They do. You know, and it just goes on and on. Don't think that your generation is it, and that you're going to solve all of life's problems. You're going to find the fountain of youth or whatever, because there isn't any fountain of youth. So you'd be, you know, that's a empty pursuit. And Solomon warns about that. And he gives an example of that, as was mentioned. The sun also rises, the sun goes down. Does that every day. The first day it doesn't do that, well, that's the end of the world. There's no more. It does that every day. All right? And we see that. It hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. And was saying, it's just this cycle. It keeps going on and on and over and over and over again. It's been doing that since the beginning of time. It has been. The wind's been going around and around. Since the beginning, sun's been coming up and going down since the beginning. He talks about the water and the river. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea's not full. Well, a lot of people, especially about that time, didn't understand why. Of course, God did, and he told Solomon. It wasn't until, it was either like late 1700, early 1800 or something like that, that the water cycle was even partly understood. And yet Solomon was talking about it, you know, more than 1,000 years before Christ. And Solomon was smart, but he was told this by inspiration, because God's the only one that knew that at the time. So to the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. There's that cycle again. Keeps on going. Rivers flow into the ocean, and then water evaporates and goes over the land, rains, fills rivers, goes back. Over and over and over and over and over again. Keeps on going. So he says, all things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Same thing. It doesn't get full. Your eye doesn't get full. There isn't any fullness there. It just continues to want to see more, learn more, whatever. Same way with your ear. It's just continuing on and on and on. You just don't get to that point where, okay, I've my eye now, I can just shut them. I've seen everything I need to see. Or my ear has heard everything I need to hear. It just doesn't happen. And Solomon probably had seen and heard more than about anybody. And he says that's not what it's about. You'll never be satisfied. I think that's the idea there. The eye is not satisfied. Because this world can't satisfy you. Life apart from God can never satisfy you. And don't we see that with people, especially in our society? I mean, we can't be satisfied with anything. Doesn't make any difference. I mean, if someone gets a new cell phone today and a new one comes out tomorrow, got to have the one tomorrow. Because it's got to be 100 times better. I never learned the one from like 6 times ago. So I'm way behind. But see, the eye's not satisfied. The ear's not satisfied. We just, you know, continue to want more and more and more, whatever it might be. And Solomon is kind of warning us, you got to fight that. You kind of have to fight that, because everything just kind of pushes you, because most people are living under the sun, so that's what they're doing. They're trying to satisfy their eye. Solomon says you can't do it, but people are still going to try. And they're going to think you're crazy when you don't try. You know, they are. They're going to think, why don't you want this? Some of my students are like that about, why don't you want this phone, or why don't you want to? I have no desire for it whatsoever. And it just, they just don't get it. Why don't you want it? I just don't want it. Something else to learn. I've got other things I want to learn. Don't want to learn how to do that. And that's just, you know, that's just the way it is. So Solomon, you know, 3,000 years ago is warning us about our society. You know, we're living apart from God. And he says it's going to be a useless life. No wonder so many people are, you know, desperate in our world. Even though we have so much in our world, they're still just, you know, they feel so alone and empty and useless. And they always will when they live apart from God. That Solomon says there's no other alternative. So when you don't turn to God, then you, what do you turn to? Well, you'll turn to drugs, you'll turn to alcohol, you'll turn to money, or you'll turn to whatever to try and get that feeling of satisfaction. But it's fleeting. He says you won't ever be satisfied with that. You get one drug, and that's one of the dangerous things about drugs, isn't it? You know, you can take a small amount and you get satisfied, but if you take that amount next time, it doesn't satisfy you. So you have to take a larger amount. And bills and bills and bills and bills and bills. That's the life, Solomon says, is under the sun. And most people will always choose that. So he says in verse 9, that which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything in which it may be said, see, this is new? It's already been in ancient times before us. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. This is kind of something I mentioned before. You know, every generation may think it's smarter than the one before, but they still do the same dumb things that the generation before them did. Now, they may do them in a different way. That's not what he's talking about. They may come up with new ways of doing it, but it's still the same problem. It's still the same thing, same mistake. They'll just make it in a different way. And every generation does that. This generation may be immoral in this particular area. Well, the next generation thinks they're a lot smarter, but they'll end up being immoral in a totally different way. But they're still, it's still the same thing. It's still being immoral. It's still life under the sun. And in that sense, you know, it just, things just keep, as was mentioned, going in cycles. Just same type of thing over and over again. It may look, may have a slightly different face on it, but it's still the same issue. It just kind of shows itself a little differently. And when he says there's nothing new under the sun, there's that phrase, it's under the sun. It's living this life, just earthly life, and that's all you're thinking about. No spiritual life, no thinking about the next life, no thinking about God. And those things will always keep coming back. So he says there's no remembrance of former things. You know, always say history repeats itself, you know, and if you don't learn the lessons of history, you're bound to repeat. Well, that's kind of what he's saying. It really is. There'll be no remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. People forget, like I mentioned. People forget. You know, things, I do this all the time. I'm told to remember something, and I said, oh, well, I'm not going to write that down or anything. I'm going to remember that. That just stuck in my mind. I mean, in less than 5 minutes, I don't have a clue what it is. And I think I'll remember for ages, and it leaves that fast. So there are, most things we're not going to remember. Even the most famous people, we think about some of our former leaders like Abraham Lincoln or George Washington, and we'll always remember. But think about how little we know about them. I don't know how George Washington smelled. I don't have an idea. Just think about all the things that we don't know. Now, at some point, there were people that knew George Washington that knew what he looked like and how his hair was and what kind of horse he rode and what he liked to eat. And are there any of those people still around, or is anything written? No, there's none of that. It's forgotten. That just blows me away, having wooden teeth. That just whole idea, just wow. So Solomon says that's been around forever, that same idea. We may think the things we're doing are so great and people will remember them forever. No, they won't. That's why living under the sun is so empty. There isn't any remembrance at all. If it's apart from God. And what a lesson our society needs to hear. So now that kind of serves as the whole introduction to the book, really. And a lot of the rest of the book, especially through chapter 10, especially, is about a lot of different things that Solomon tried and his results and lessons we're supposed to learn. But these first 11 verses are like the introduction to the book. What it means to live life under the sun. What it means for something to be vain. So it says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Now he doesn't say that all the works that are done are vanity, just all the works that are done under the sun. All the works that are done just in this earthly life for earthly glory without God, without thinking about God, bringing God glory, the afterlife, all of that's without purpose. He says it's grasping for the wind. You grasp for the wind, you open your hand, there's nothing there. It is empty. So all the works people do, and they may seem great, like I said, they may seem wonderful and great and wow, he's done this, he's done that. But if it's apart from God, if it's just about this world, and that's the only reason people do them, then he says that's an empty life. That's an empty, useless work. And how sad it is that so many people live their life under the sun. And that's what their whole life is about. And, you try and talk to them about an afterlife or about God or about spiritual things or whatever, and there's just no interest there. They strictly want to live in the here and now for this life, and that's it. They don't want anything else. Solomon says they are headed for disaster. They're headed for a life of despair, a life of one that's there's no joy. They'll end up being depressed because they'll eventually get to a point in time where their health is gone or whatever, or their friends are gone or family is gone, and they have nothing. They might have a whole warehouse full of stuff. Can they enjoy any of it? Not a bit. So all that stuff, Solomon says, is empty. It's useless stuff. Profitless stuff. It can't help anybody. So that's what Solomon says. He says, I've seen all of those works, and if they're done under the sun, it's all vanity, and it's grasping for the wind. And he says, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. He uses kind of a similar phrase over in Ecclesiastes 7. Let's turn over there just a second. Ecclesiastes 7. I love Ecclesiastes 7. It's one of my favorite chapters in the book. Verse 13 says, "Consider the work of God, for who can make straight what He has made crooked?" Don't people try to do that, though? I mean, even today, what God has made, they try and change it. Like what path God has made, they try to change it. Well, back at the very beginning, Solomon kind of says the same thing in verse 15. Pretty much the same idea. See if I have anything else I wanted to say about that. There is things that are crooked, we usually think about not being perfect or not being right in some way. And he says what's lacking. A lot of things we can't do anything about. We might make them better. We can't make the letter S, which is crooked, straight, because why? Then it wouldn't be an S. All right? So, there are a lot of things certainly out there in the world that are not perfect and are not right. But regardless of how much work any of us put into it, that doesn't mean we're going to be able to make it straight. And Solomon says, if you're doing that apart from God, you're not going to accomplish it. You're not going to accomplish really anything that's worthwhile that's apart from God. Because those works, he says, that are done under the sun, it's all vanity, it's all empty, it's all useless. And what a, man, what a lesson. I mean, talk about a book in the Bible that our society needs to hear. Wow. They need to just go back and look at Solomon's life and all the things that he did and had, more than anybody. And there's a lot of rich people in the world nowadays. But then they pale in comparison to what Solomon had. I mean, they're paupers compared to Solomon. So if anybody knew, if those type of things could bring fulfillment and satisfy you and bring joy, Solomon would know it. Solomon says it's all empty, every bit of it. It's all just totally useless. Well, that's a lesson for our country. That is a huge lesson. I think it's probably a good place to stop. And we'll hopefully, Lord willing, next Wednesday night start with verse 16. There's so many tremendous lessons in this book that, we could just go on and on about every one of them.
You can't get a God in your life if you ain't got nothing.
Yeah, that's what Solomon says, really. That's the whole key. Yep. I think we said something last week about the key of life. People look for the key of life under the sun, and it's not there. They never find the key of life under the sun. They have to go to the locksmith. They have to go to the one that actually created the lock, and he can give you the key, but you can't find it anywhere else. But so many people refuse to look there. They just refuse to look to God.
You can see what I come up with.
Okay. I got broad shoulders.
There you go. Solomon said something in verse 14 that I want to apply to the gospel, and especially about salvation. He said, "I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and grasping for the wind." We've talked Sunday morning a couple times about faith and works and their relationship and so forth. And you see so much in the world with new religions and so forth. People will say, "Well, if you do this, this, and this, or whatever, that's the path to God." But all of those do one thing, and they leave out what God has said is the path to God. And so people that are still trying to find works, and even with the people that often say that you're saved by faith alone, they make that into a work. Well, they would deny that, obviously, but they really do. They make that into work. They say, if you do this one thing, you're saved. Well, the Bible never teaches you say, you do this one thing and you're saved. Well, that's a work really that's under the sun, because that's apart from God. God hadn't said that. So that's not His word. And so many people in the world, so many religions say that, okay, you need to pray five times, or you need to make this offering, or you need to do this, or you need to make this trip. And the idea that doing those things somehow puts God, in your debt, that you've done that, well, God owes you something now. Solomon says those are works under the sun. Solomon says those are empty works. Those are empty, useless works. It says the only type of work, like James talks about, that's saved is one that's based upon faith. Not just some mental acknowledgement that God exists, but a faith that's obedient, that actually submits to what God has said and does what God says.
Some of them says, if you give all the money to the church, then you go to heaven.
Okay. There's a work under the sun. There's a work under the sun. None of those works can save at all. It's that obedient faith, that faith that's coupled with works, that is able to save. But the person has to submit to God. You know, they have to be humble. They have to admit that their life is not now what God wants them to. And so they're willing to make that change. They repent. They're willing to confess. They're willing to be baptized. And they do that not believing that they've earned salvation, but that's what God has said to do, to come to Him. And so you've submitted to His will. You have an obedient faith. And at that point then, that saves. Because that's when you come in contact with the blood of Christ. But it doesn't mean you're saved from then on forever. The Bible says you have to continue to confess and ask to be forgiven. That's a continual thing that one must do to have that blood wash our sins away. So tonight, as David leads us in this song, if anyone needs to come, we encourage you to do so as we stand and sing.